Ambassador Martin Indyk, I, Paula Gordon, Bill Russell. It's always interesting to me. I've always been interested in the idea of international relations, but that sounds big. A lot of this is one person with another person, and the individuality of this also really matters, doesn't it? Who those players are?
Yeah. You know, when you look back at where breakthroughs to peace were achieved, the leadership was very important. What I've also discovered is that, you know, people-to-people relations are very important too, at the ground level. But without the leaders, it's incredibly difficult to change the environment. And so we need those leaders. And where you had them, where you had Sadat and Begin and Carter, you could achieve peace. Hussein, Rabin, Clinton, you could achieve peace. Arafat and Rabin were, you know, with Clinton, were on their way. But Arafat had some fatal flaws that, and of course, Rabin was assassinated. Rabin understood how to deal with Arafat. He understood how to move him in the right direction. With Rabin's assassination, we lost that relationship of trust that had been built up over the previous years, and Barak never managed to establish it with him.
You say that let's see if I can get this correctly. The Palestinians must have justice and the Arabs must have respect. Mm. What then must the Israelis have?
Security and recognition. That's the heart of the matter for the Israelis, is this acceptance by their neighbors that they're willing to accept a Jewish state in the midst of the Middle East. And that when they take risks for peace, evacuate Arab territory, and make peace, that those which have security arrangements in them, that those agreements will be respected in a way that Israel will have a secure peace. And you know, that is, I think, critical here. In many ways, you know, to be an effective diplomat, you need to be a psychiatrist. There are a lot of traumas, personality disorders. I think Arafat was a narcissist, basically. But in the Israeli case, it's a deep insecurity that's generated by thousands of years of experience of oppression and you know, in each generation, somebody rising to kill the Jews.
I would like
destroy Israel.
Take a minute. You're talking about, you know, we've been talking about government-to-government relations. There is a role in this, it would seem, because you were talking about the importance of people-to-people. But NGOs, you know, the organizations that you've worked with and been working with now.
Non-governmental organizations.
It seems to me that that's also part of the equation, and that there is opportunity and danger in the role those organizations play, both as, you know, both from a positive standpoint, but also the potential for, you know, lobbying that is inappropriate lobbying from any side. But how do you put that into the equation? The role of NGOs.
Yeah, it's very important. Clearly, as I say, peace can be made between leaders, but it has to be supported by the people on both sides. And there's a great deal of distrust and anger, and part of the problem here is that, you know, it's one thing to move from war to peace, but it's another thing to go move from war to peace and back to war. Getting back to peace again is really difficult. So again, you have to shape the environment in which these NGOs can operate effectively in building a culture of peace.
Both there and in places like the United States.
Well, in the United States, what's critical is that those who have an interest, the Arab American community, the American Jewish community, need to mobilize in support of ending this conflict instead of dividing and basically supporting, you know, the hardliners on both sides. And you know, when Arafat and Rabin shook hands on the White House lawn that afternoon, we brought together those two communities and all of their NGO organizations in the White House. President Clinton addressed them. It was an amazing moment in which Americans, Arabs and Jews, reached across the aisle in a similar way and talked about how they were going to work together. And somehow we have to recreate that sense of common purpose here. And you know, in the Jewish community, and I experienced this as an American Jew, it was a very hard experience for me. After those years of trying to work to achieve peace, Jewish community here, the leadership at least, concluded, you know, it was a fraud, it was a mistake to trust Arafat, and it was better to support George Bush when he walked away from it, and that American engagement meant pressure on Israel, that would be bad, and they're much better to let Sharon deal with it in his own way. And it was, I think, a misunderstanding of what Israel needed in terms of its objectives of survival, its well-being, peace, its security, cannot be achieved just by force alone, as we just saw in Gaza. That there needs to be a diplomatic effort to resolve the conflict, and it can't succeed without American engagement.
On all levels.
So therefore it's pro-Israel for an American president to be involved. It's not against Israel. It's in order to help Israel achieve peace. And I think it's really important that, you know, you talk about NGOs. I know it's a code word here. We're talking about AIPAC. We're talking about...
I really wasn't, but certainly it's there.
All right, we're talking the pro-Israel lobby. I think needs to get behind Barack Obama. It needs to feel secure that he's going to do the right thing by Israel. And that if, you know, if it doesn't work, he's going to be in the trenches with Israel. And I think he understands that. But they need to understand that it's time to get behind that effort. Because if their interest is to secure Israel, this is the best way to achieve it.
Isn't that the world's interest?
Well, increasingly, I mean, that's an interesting point, you know, that there is a broad consensus across the world now that we have to resolve this conflict between Israel and the Palestinians, and there is a solution. That is to say, an independent Palestinian state, viable, contiguous, in the West Bank and Gaza, living alongside a Jewish state of Israel in peace. And Shimon Peres says, you know, we all know the light at the end of the tunnel. The problem is we don't have a tunnel. The problem is how do we get there? And we have to harness that intention. You know, there are 23 Arab states who have signed up to ending the conflict with Israel through the Arab League Peace Initiative. And now there's like, I think it's 56 Muslim countries, including the Arab states, who are also signed on to this peace initiative. People are kind of exhausted by this conflict. They need to see an end to it. They can see that it's, you know, it's Al-Qaeda and it's Hamas and it's Hezbollah and it's Ahmadinejad who are gaining from this conflict. And everybody else is losing. So people would like to see it finished. But the heart of the problem here is that Palestinians and Israelis, while they believe in a two-state solution, they don't believe it's possible anymore. And Barack Obama's critical challenge is to convince Israelis and Palestinians, the people, that it can still work and reinstill some hope in the minds of the people that, in fact, making peace is going to secure their futures better than continuing with this bloody conflict.
Thank you for beginning the process that we hope will come to a real fruition in the years ahead.
I hope so too.
Martin Indyk is as engaging in his book Innocent Abroad as he is in conversation. His even-handed candor is refreshing, and his commitment to finding ways to peace is itself a cause for optimism. We thank him for the book, and we thank him for joining us. I'm Paula Gordon. I wish you well.